Hi, welcome. This is the Config Manager overview session. My name is Mark Florida. I'm a program manager on the Config Manager team, and this is...
I'm Wally Mead. I'm a program manager on the Configuration Manager team as well.
Thanks for coming out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to first kind of talk to you about, you know, how we arrived at Configuration Manager 2012. And before getting into that, what I wanted to do was just sort of recap, you know, how we've approached client management at Microsoft. So we've got a long, rich history. We started in 94. We've focused a lot of our efforts on, you know, managing NT domain machines, moving on to managing by groups. That was basically based off of Active Directory. Then we made our way into managing a diverse set of platforms using Config Manager 2003. That's something that you may hear me allude to or others throughout the week as being very focused on managing devices. As we sort of moved up in our product lifecycle, we started to add in more and more features. That came in with 2007. 2007, we added features like OSD, DCM, desired configuration monitoring. And what that allowed us to do was really just have a kind of a full diverse set of features. And it's at that point in time where we, in essence, you know, had most management capabilities that are needed for device-centric management. Then what happened is we sort of transitioned. We recognized a certain trend was occurring. You know, you've seen it with consumerization of IT. You'll see it, you know, just with users becoming just frankly more savvy in what they need at work. And that's where we started to try to embrace the user more in how we approach management. And that's where you first see it with Config Manager 2012, feature functionality, which I'll show you here today, like our application catalog to enable a shopping experience. And then also with Intune, as you look at that as being a way to manage through the cloud, it's also one that very much adopted and embraced the kind of user-centric or people-centric way of management. So again, when we looked at 2012, it all kind of started with us talking to customers and determining that the typical end user in an enterprise was changing. You know, there's trends like bring your own device. There's also just sort of, a maturation process that was occurring with end users becoming, you know, more savvy in what they would want to do. You know, certain frustrations would break out. I can do this on my home device. How come I can't do this at work? We started to see that certain corporations were being put at a competitive disadvantage compared to their peers because they may have had certain controls that other corporations didn't have. So that's where we tried to look at, you know, how can we help IT manage these end users, which often meant managing more devices, you know, like smartphones and the such. But at the same time, we wanted to make sure, you know, while sort of providing these additional capabilities, we wanted to make sure that IT's, you know, sort of promise to the business could be covered as well. It's not so much about delivering just the capabilities to the end user. If you can't meet your compliance needs, that's not going to really help you much at all. So what we ended up doing was trying to break down just some sort of basic elements in our product. Again, sort of moving away from being very device-focused to being one where we, you know, consider it more user-focused. You'll see that kind of mentioned as, you know, nowadays as sort of people-centric. You'll see that with a lot of the Windows 8 work that's going on. And then the other thing that we're seeing, too, is there's a bit of a blurring that's been going on for the last several years in terms of, you know, is it a corporate machine? Is it a consumer? What we're really doing is starting to move away from being focused just on this is a corporate asset to instead being focused more on is this a device that a person might have more control over. That doesn't necessarily mean the person owns the device. It could very well be a certain platform that just may not have all the management hooks that you might be used to, or it might just mean a situation where you have a particular user group within your corporation where they may want to have, greater self-service needs. And that's where we start to branch off and we start to focus on scenarios where we really try to bring the end user into the management of their device. But at the same time, we want to make sure that the IT admin can implement their controls so that they can provide an experience that not only enables, makes the end user more productive, but at the same time, you can meet your compliance needs, you can meet your IT policy needs that you might have. So part of that, which we covered in 2012, is around the app experience. So you'll see me sort of get into talking about a new feature that we implemented in our product. We call it application management. It's different than just normal classic software distribution with packages and programs. And then the other enhancement that we made too, which Wally will touch on later in the deck, is really kind of looking at our mechanisms to do compliance, moving beyond just the ability to just monitor for changes, but also remediate changes using our settings management features. So what we have here today is really kind of three pillars of our product that I'll go into, and then Wally will pick up on the middle piece, and then I'll come back later for how we simplified the product. Really, empowering the end user can be summed up fairly simply as, how do we look at providing applications to a user anywhere? And the second pillar is much more about looking at the classic Config Manager 2007 hierarchy and changes that we took to really lessen the administrative or the cost of operating those hierarchies. You know, how can you eliminate site servers? How can you greatly eliminate, admin complexity? You know, how do you sort of simplify how things are working is covered in that third pillar. So when we look at empowering end users, it really comes down to just two kind of key topics. One is quite long, which is around application delivery. And then the second one is how we have taken some steps to do a better job at managing these more modern mobile devices. So with application delivery, we started with, how can we be able to provide applications to a user, but at the same time, making sure the administrator can manage directly at the user level as well. You know, the good analogy I always look for this is we try to get people out of Excel spreadsheets. Kind of a good example from CM07 that I've seen, unfortunately, with a lot of customers is that generally there's an end user at the end of a request. They need a piece of software to do their job. They need it, to be productive. And what typically has to happen is there has to be a translation that goes on in CM07, which typically have to do is determine not just who the user is, but you have to figure out what device they need that on. And then what you end up doing is you target the software directly to the device. Your overarching intent is to deliver functionality to the user, but in Config Manager 2007, we unfortunately make you target a device, which isn't really what you want to have happen. Where this further gets complicated is when you think about end users and how they won't necessarily use just one device. In some situations, it might be a laptop, and on a laptop scenario, a simple Windows installer-based application might be just fine. However, let's say you're at a remote network connection where that same installation just may not be appropriate. Then it becomes, you may want to deliver it a different way, such as providing it, through a Citrix experience or a remote desktop experience. And the key thing there with this whole model that we put together in this application experience is one where the administrator can say, I'd like this application to be targeted at this user group. And then for a given application, you can model it many different ways based off of your needs. You can have multiple ways of delivering it. Windows installer, app virtualization. We have ways of just deploying them via scripts. And then what happens is the application model itself, the way that you write it, the rules that you write it, the conditions that you want it to install in, will determine how best to deliver that application. If you got some need for, super security, you don't want to necessarily have a footprint on the device, then what you can do is, provide that through a remote desktop experience. Again, if you want to make sure you install that locally on a device, then you can write the rules in such a way to make sure it installs. And kind of one of the key things to hit on when you talk about installing things on a local device is that we now have a mechanism in place to really understand what type of device this is for a user. One of the challenges with Configuration Manager 2007 was using a shared machine or a kiosk or a hotel type of situation, where you might log into a machine as in essence a guest. You're only using it for the day, or you might use it just for the hour. You don't necessarily want all of your applications to install. Config Manager 2007, if you were to target users, that software would just frankly install. We now have something that we call user device affinity, which allows you to establish a relationship between a user and a device. And we provide some means to make that efficient for you. You can do it based off of login, based off of a login algorithm, import from an HR system or something along those lines. But the key thing is that the system will kind of know this relationship between the user and the device, and then you're able to craft rules to control, again, how that application gets installed. So when you take a look at the application model, it can be kind of decomposed into, you know, probably two key areas. One is the application that's sort of the root. It's, again, this container, if you will. And the application has metadata on it, sort of describes what the application is. And by metadata, I mean things like a description. So if somebody's shopping in our application catalog for the app, they can understand what it's for. It can have multiple deployment types again. A given deployment type has what we call a detection method. A detection method is just a way in which to know whether it's been installed or not. If you're at all familiar with how software updates works, just the sort of basic sort of notion of, you know, an update that gets published from Microsoft, it's very similar in how that works. Basically, what we do is we check to see if an app has already been installed using the detection method. If it comes back as false, then we know that we need to invoke an install method, which is that second line item there for the install command. The requirement rules, that's really the controls that the administrator has to determine the conditions in which to install an application. You might end up with requirement rules that are more laws of nature. You know, an application can't install unless you have sufficient RAM. It's just functionally not going to work, or the installer itself won't work. You can also define requirement rules which are more business intent. You know, things like, I'll only allow this application to be installed in a particular OU. Or another kind of common one is that people will stamp registry values. This is a corporate machine, thus I'll allow an app to be installed. And that's the power of the requirement rules. The overall system the application model is built on top of is the same system that we use for settings management. So if you're all familiar with the sort of richness that we offer in settings management with all the different providers, it's that same underlying mechanic that you can use to write requirement rules. So you have, you know, basically the full power of, you know, analyzing a given system to determine what conditions to install an app. The other benefit of requirement rules is that, unlike Configuration Manager 2007, where people would put a lot of these requirements in their collection logic, you aren't tethered to inventory. With inventory, you typically have a lag, you know, 24 hours, 7 days, in order to get that results back to the server. So oftentimes you can be deploying software to a collection, but the actual membership of a collection may have changed over time. Requirement rules are evaluated at the time of installation, and as a result, you can make sure that attempted install is much more successful because you're running the rules right then and there, right before you're going to do the installation. Dependencies and supersedents, those are somewhat similar to requirement rules in that they're prerequisites to be managed, but the difference is that they're really relationships to other applications. The concepts are fairly straightforward. In order to install some app, you might have a dependency on .NET. Supersedents, you might be trying to deploy a new version of Reader, and you got to remove the previous version of Reader. So you can build Adobe Reader, sorry. You can then build a relationship between those two, thus being a supersedence relationship. So that's kind of the admin side. That's how the model works. Now, from the end user side, we realized that in order to really provide a people-centric experience, what we needed to have happen was have a catalog that was built for an end user to really be able to interact with. You know, obviously we have the run advertise program functionality in Config Manager 2007, but that didn't provide nearly the richness of information and a UI experience that end users are more accustomed to today. So we built a website, and in that website you can get lists of applications, you can request them, and so on and so forth. You can drill in and see details. This being, you know, much more of a fitting experience for the end user. And then the hope is they'll be more successful shopping for the applications that they need. They'll be able to install them. They'll be able to run the installations using those requirement rules so that hopefully it's a safer installation experience, because that's the end goal, is you want to be able to offer these apps for end users to install, and you don't want to have the downside effects of perhaps a help desk call to help them get through that experience. So kind of transitioning away from apps for a second, and then I'll get into a demo, is mobile device management. So with mobile device management, we implemented in 2012 an Exchange connector. What the Exchange connector allows you to do is, through the Config Manager console, basically manage policy settings, and, as well as commit some actions like device wipe directly from the Config Manager console. You know, the advantage of this is that you can use Configuration Manager as your one console to do your settings for your devices, whether they be mobile devices or, you know, traditional laptop, desktop type of devices. So what I'm going to do is hop into, let me make sure I got that right. Okay, good. So I'm going to kind of hop in this in the console here, and I'm going to show you a just a quick demo. This is sort of a very basic scenario that most customers will have to deal with at some point. So what I've done is I've pre-created an application called Adobe Reader, and what I wanted to do is call out just a couple things. Is that when you're creating applications, what we do is we allow you to reference material. For example, I can provide an MSI, a Windows installer file, and we will read that file and we'll extract information for you, such as the product code. And then we can use that product code as a way of detection. So what I've done is I've created this Adobe Reader. It was created just simply by pointing at the Reader MSI file, AcroRead 32. And what it ended up doing was creating a single deployment type. And that, again, is that relationship that we have. We have the application, and then it can have multiple deployment types. This is just a simple scenario where it's just one app with one deployment type. And what you can do then is you don't deploy the deployment type. You know, unlike packages and programs where you would select the program and you would send that to a collection, with applications, you don't do that. You do it at the application layer where you... you come here and you select deploy, and then you go through an experience which is fairly similar to what you do in Config Manager 2007 with packages and programs. You pick a collection and off you go. So what I had done is I had created this deployment here, which is just a simple deployment to all users. The new thing to kind of point out here is the intent that you're now able to specify on a deployment. So this is an available deployment, and what available means is that when you target it to a user and make it available, it will make it available in the software catalog. However, there's two other intents you can choose. You can choose required. That's no different than a mandatory assignment where it'll basically be force installed upon whoever the target is, user or machine. We also have a uninstall intent. If you, for some reason, wanted to have this app removed, you could also have the intent of uninstall as well. And before kind of showing you the demo, there's one other thing I want to look at, which is on the deployment type. So the whole, again, the whole kind of system, if you will, is really built based off of the detection method. The detection method is the thing the system knows to look for, to see whether it's installed or not. So it's no longer based off of packages and programs where you look at the advertisement ID and so forth to figure out whether something has been run on the device. This will actually look at a real fingerprint to see if the application has been installed or not. And based off of this and your intent, you want it installed, you want it uninstalled, we can continually check the device over and over again. So, you may hear us refer to this as being sort of state-based. What it really means is that the system will reevaluate on a schedule, and you can configure the schedule how you see fit, but the system will basically, once installed, it'll continue to reevaluate, and it'll check to make sure the app is still installed. So, for example, let's say you're installing some piece of software that's needed for, some security purpose. You can basically have it where the system will just continually check again and again and again, making sure maybe the end user hasn't removed it or maybe something hasn't tampered with the system, so you can force that back on there. Same thing with uninstall. If you want to get something off the box, you can set the system up so that it'll always be trying to put your desired state on the box. Now, the application model was specifically built for applications. So if you do have scripting needs, run once type of actions that you want to commit, we still have packages and programs, so you can still use that for that mechanism, and it is what we recommend. Application model was simply built to try to take this very generic script execution mechanism we had in Config Manager 2007 and really promote the management of application so that we could in the end provide a lot of rich functionality, but get people into a more simple world. A good example is that we worked with a lot of customers who had custom script wrappers. They wouldn't necessarily just call an MSI. They might wrap that MSI in a script wrapper, and in that MSI, they might be doing their own form of prerequisite checking, or they might be doing their own dependency handling and so forth. What we intended to do was try to eliminate people from having to do that script wrapping exercise. Instead, you just put all your intent directly into the system itself and let Configuration Manager go and manage these applications for you. So that's what the kind of deployment type looks like in a glance, and we have a session later this week where they go into much more details on app management. So I made this available to an end user, and what I'm going to do is head over to the client here. And this is what that application catalog looks like. So this is one that I made available, but I didn't make it require approval. We do have the ability on a deployment to be able to have it request approval. And what that simply does, if I click here, is it basically puts up a field where I can explain why I need this application, you know, put in a cost center or something along those lines, hit submit, and then that goes off into our system. And then it requires an app approver to then approve the request. And then the second it's been approved, it'll then be installed on my device for me. But I'm not going to do that. So let me go back here to Adobe Reader 9, the one we were looking at. So when I install it, what I'll talk to is on the screen because it's going by too fast, is when you click install, it's running the requirement rules, and that's happening all before content is downloaded. So kind of unlike what you might see in Config Manager 2007, you don't have to get burdened by distributing the content down to a client and then actually running the installer before figuring out the thing won't run at all. Instead, you can model the application in such a way where you can check for all those sort of prerequisite rules that you might have. And then what happens is, So what happens is it will evaluate the rules, and then once it makes a determination that, yes, I can install, it's at that point in time it'll grab content and it'll go off and install on the client itself. So in a demo environment, obviously, content's not much of a problem. I can pull it pretty quick. But in the real world, over like a WAN link or a congested LAN network, that can be very beneficial. So that's simple, basic app management. We've been doing that type of demo for, a while now. So I'm much more happy to talk about this. This is Configuration Manager 2012 SP1. So a couple weeks ago, we released a CTP build. I think it's a community technology preview. If you haven't, gone off and downloaded it, I suggest you just take a look at the functionality. So, all that same stuff that I talked about with that model, that's still there. But now we support Windows 8, and we'll kind of, hit on what that looks like in a little bit at the bottom there, is that it's about supporting those Windows 8 apps. So, the new modern shell, the little Metro tiles. It's about supporting those type of applications. We also have applications that we call deep links. Deep links are the kind of reference pointers, if you will, to the store itself. So if you wanted to have sort of a single place where end users can get all of the IT applications, whether they're ones that you're going to install or even recommend, you can use deep links as a way to publish an app to an end user all in one place, the application catalog. And then a deep link can simply refer to them to the Windows Store in order to get access. The other thing that we did, kind of bouncing back to the top two, is we support new platforms. So we support the Windows 8 ISOC tablet. So that's, specific to the Intel architecture. So that's going to be x86 devices that are tablets. There was a decent amount of changes we made on our client to support that platform because of a lot of the enhancements they put into ISOC in order to, and really Windows 8, I guess, in general, in really trying to preserve the end user experience, maximize battery life, and so on. So we had to change how our client ran and was a good citizen on those platforms. But for customers, I don't think you'll really notice too much of a difference. We tried to just make this as seamless as possible to you so that you could quickly onboard not only Windows 8 on your laptops, desktops, but also these new form factors, these, Slate devices and how they work. The third and fourth bullets are new configuration manager clients for those platforms. So it's, Mac OS support. It's a separate client. You take it, you deploy it out to your Mac clients. It reports back to Config Manager, very similar to how the normal Windows client works. And I'm going to show you a demo of that in a second here. And then we also support Linux and Unix clients as well. Another kind of major item that we support is Windows to Go. So what we did is we modified some of the pieces that we have in operating system deployment so that you're able to create Windows to Go images, provision them, and as well as manage those devices as well. So when I talk about managing it, what I really mean is that after you've sort of provisioned the USB stick or whatever you're using to run your Windows to Go image, you can once you're in that environment, once you've booted up, if you will, the Windows to Go image, you can have a configuration manager client inside that image, and it'll successfully be able to communicate back to your Config Manager infrastructure. Okay, so demo time. Now this one's going to be much riskier than the other demo I just did. So let me show you first here. So we're on the server, and Skype. That'll be the app that I'm going to try to install. So first thing to notice here is, you know, looky there, new technology type. So this is another deployment type that's in our application model. So now in Service Pack 1, what you'll be able to do is you can define not just an application that has Windows deployment types, but the same application could have a Mac deployment type if you want to. So the end goal of this demo is how do I get Skype installed on this Mac. So let me cut over and show you the client real quick. Okay, good. All right, so on here, this is just basically proven I don't have anything up my sleeves. Skype, it's not installed here. So the whole goal is to try to get it on this client. So I'm going to cut back to the... Perfect. Okay, so I've already modeled Skype. It's very similar to how you might create a Windows, you know, Windows deployment type. I basically, you know, took a piece of content for the actual Skype application, built an app model. Not terribly complex to do. So what I'm going to do is deploy it. And as I select a device collection, I'm going to deploy it to my Mac clients. I just got one. Then I've already distributed content for it. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose install. And I want to do a required deployment. So basically force push that application onto this device. Scheduling, you know, I'm not going to change any of this. Basically just install as quick as possible. User experience, you got similar knobs and controls that you've had in Config Manager 2007. I'll just leave these as defaults. We now have alerting capabilities in 2012. This is sort of the ability to, you know, if the deployment isn't going well, you can get alerted to that in the console. And summary. Okay, so now I got the deployment. You can kind of confirm it right here. It's required. Now, this is where it gets fun. So this, I'll just do connect now and then talk about it. Okay, so what we install, when you install the Mac client on a Mac, what it has is a lot of the same kind of parallel functionality you might be used to on a Configuration Manager client. It obviously works different. It's a different platform. But this is in system preferences, this dialog that you're looking at right here. It's really analogous to the control panel applet that we have in Config Manager. So what I'm doing here is roughly equivalent to refreshing machine policy, basically polling the server to get the policy immediately rather than having to wait, you know, the polling interval, because that's kind of, you know, boring. Okay, so what it did is it talked up to the server, hit force the policy grab, and now it's going to try to install Skype on this device. You know, based off of the user experience options I showed, that's why it's visible here. And what I'm going to do is click install now. So it's going to now call the actual Skype installer itself. So Config Manager, for the most part, has now kind of handed it over to the installer. The installer is going to go off and install it. And then when it's done, hopefully we'll see it show up in Finder there. It's already starting to show up right now. So that Skype should finish installing in a second. And then what's going to happen is all the state and everything is going to return back to our console. So you'll be able to, you know, measure you know, how the application installed. So it looks like install worked out without a problem. So now what I'm able to do is, you know, manage, you know, be able to manage and push software there. So let me change back to PowerPoint. Okay, perfect. Okay, so what I'm going to do is hand it over to Wally, and he's going to talk to you about what we've done on the infrastructure side of the house to, you know, kind of simplify, you know, how you might have your hierarchy. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mark. And just like Mark, I want to welcome you all to TechEd here in Amsterdam. Hopefully you're having a great start to your conference, and you're learning lots about Configuration Manager. We've got lots of labs and breakout sessions going on, including Mark did one earlier with AJ on endpoint protection. Anyway, I'm going to jump in and talk about the second pillar that Mark showed you earlier, which was on unifying infrastructure. And as Mark mentioned, this is basically around the process of reducing your costs, that it maintains or requires you guys to maintain your configuration management environment, to manage these clients, whether the Macintoshes or Linux, Unix, or the traditional Windows environments. So reducing those costs and then giving you better controls over your clients. So those bottom six things in those boxes, better security, better compliance settings, better ability to remediate your infrastructure. And I'll talk about all these on the upcoming slides. So the first thing is reducing your infrastructure requirements. So a number of you probably have site hierarchies in your existing 2007 environment where you have a central site, primary sites, maybe another layer of primary sites, maybe even another layer of primary sites, then some secondary sites. We've reduced that infrastructure for you by giving you a fixed or definitive size of your hierarchy. So if you need to have more than one primary site, you'll start with the central administration site, which is a brand new type of site role in Configuration Manager 2012. It's not a primary site like you guys have today that you just put at the top and other sites attached to it. It's now a brand new type of site you have to install specifically during setup. And it's really there for centralized reporting and administration. So all your administrators can go to the central administration site, do their work there, and you get consolidated reporting of all your sites. But that's if you need to have more than one primary site. You can still have a site as a standalone primary and even secondary sites below that as necessary. So your next layer, if you're going to have a CAS, is certainly going to be primary sites, because a CAS can't manage clients. You have to have primary sites underneath a CAS to make that CAS worthwhile. So you can have multiple primary sites in your second layer of your hierarchy. And this is really where your clients are managed. So just like today, your clients are assigned to a primary site. They get policies from a primary site. They install their software, they install their software updates through their malware remediation, et cetera, all from primary sites. Again, you can have a standalone primary site. If you need to have more than one primary site, then you have the central administration site installed first. Then if you need to, you can install a layer of secondary sites. So below primary sites, you can then have secondary sites. If you come to John and my presentation tomorrow morning, I believe it's at 10:15, we'll talk much more detail about these different types of sites and when you might need to have more than one primary site and whether or not you need to have secondary sites. We're hoping with some of the changes we made in 2012, you don't even have to have secondary sites anymore. But if you do need to, you can have a layer of secondary sites below your primary sites. Clients can reside in those boundaries and utilize the resources of the secondary site even though they're assigned to that layer of primary sites. So that's to scale out your distribution points, provide local point of contact for your clients so they're not going across the WAN to get content or to get policies, as well as for content routing, meaning one secondary site can pass content, package files, down to another secondary site, another same primary site. So we've reduced the number of layers in your infrastructure that you can have, a max of three now, one central site, one layer of primaries, and one layer of secondary sites, versus the multiple tiers that you could have, unlimited number of layers that you could have in 2007. Environment. From there, it's once you got your infrastructure, it's really the management of your clients. And Mark touched on the application model and how we're doing some things there. One of those is by treating virtual clients the exact same way we treat any other client, whether it's a Macintosh, again, whether it's a Linux, Unix, or whether it's a laptop, desktop running Windows, you want the same type of client experience. So the admin goes to one console, does all of his work in one console, and doesn't really have to be too concerned about the platform of the client. Yeah, you pick some different options here and there, but we give you support for your virtual environments just like your physical environment. We don't really care. And then you have your mobile devices through the Exchange connector, or the ones with the clients, or your Macs and your Linux, Unix, and so on. So trying to give you a rich experience for your clients no matter what that type of platform happens to be. We do provide great support for virtual environments. The bottom couple of bullets there talk about the ability of us in a VDI scenario of maintaining uniqueness of your pooled sessions so that we can go ahead and transfer that and monitor that so that you don't have overlapping scenarios, as well as randomizing your task. So by default, we have built-in randomization factors. So instead of all clients in a VDI pooled scenario all hitting the same hosted system to generate inventory at the same time or install some software at the same time, they'll all randomly pick some time in a configured time frame so that you're spreading the load across the network and through that host computer. So that's all built into Configuration Manager 2012, as well as the normal application delivery through MSIs or AppV scenarios, and Mark mentioned the Citrix or the remote desktop scenario earlier. We also want to give you better protection. So we have now integrated System Center 2012 endpoint protection into Configuration Manager. Some of you probably played around with FEP 2010 and its integration to Configuration Manager 2007. So what you know about that, you can kind of completely forget because it's really well redone in ConfigMan 2012. A single install, it's a single database, no separate installation, no separate collections or packages or so on. It's integrated into the product. You enable it, and it acts just like software updates or anything else. So it's directly integrated into the product. So it gives you great ability of downloading new definitions through Configuration Manager automatically, keeping your client up to date with those new definitions, and then scanning for malware and for antivirus, and then immediately remediating if any of this does happen to bypass all your detection rules, definitions, if there are any new viruses out there. It's all built into the console. Here's a screenshot of what the dashboard would look like to show you what your environment is, as far as your malware and virus scenarios, whether you're healthy clients or you have any malware. Lower right-hand side, it shows you that we've had some malware in the last X number of hours. So that's all built in, but we also do just standard patching. So standard patch stuff, and Mark and AJ did a session earlier today on endpoint protection. If you missed that, you can get the recording of it from the MyTechEd site. We also, Mark and I are doing a session late Friday, back to the last session of the day, on patching. And we'll walk you through what the scenario is there for managing software updates through Configuration Manager. But in essence, you take a WSUS computer as you have now that's synchronizing with Microsoft Update. You turn that into a Configuration Manager software update point. We get the catalog metadata from that software update point through WSUS. Clients then are told to scan against our software update point. They go to the catalog in WSUS, they do their scanning, they report their compliance or non-compliance levels. You as the admin decide, hey, I need to do some patching. So you select the patches you want to deploy, you deploy those out to your clients. Clients get the policy, just like Mark did on the Mac, they would get the policy from us. They would go to our distribution point infrastructure, to find those patches and install them locally and report in compliance. So all directly within the Configuration Manager space. So that's the core scenario. A couple things we've added here for you in 2012 are auto deployment. The ability of simulating what you guys know today is the automatic approval rules in WSUS, create those rules inside Configuration Manager. So no longer on a monthly basis do you have to manually pick your updates, run through the distribute software updates wizard, and deploy your updates. You can now create a rule that says, whenever I see this type of update, this date and time, for this product that came from this manufacturer, automatically deploy that to this collection, given this time frame, this deadline, and when do they become mandatory. Great way of getting your endpoint protection definition files down. So automatically download those through an automatic deployment rule, distribute them through our infrastructure, get your clients updated on a consistent and scheduled basis without you doing anything other than creating the auto deployment rule once. And then the rest of it is all done off of a schedule and happens automatically. State-based updates, as Mark mentioned before, the update's there, great. If it's required, we're going to deploy it. If an end user happens to uninstall it, we're going to go ahead and redeploy it, just like the application model that Mark talked about before. And then we give you the new content model, a content library, being if a single update is used by multiple different patches, so a single binary used by multiple different updates, we store it on the distribution point one time instead of multiple times like you would have today. So that reduces your disk space requirements. It also reduces your network traffic to get the update down to your client computer. And then fantastic in console monitoring to let you see where you're at in your compliance, whether it's application delivery, whether it is endpoint protection, whether it is software updates, or whether it is settings management. Great in-console monitoring lets you know what your compliance level is and who is not compliant and what you need to do about that non-compliance level. So Mark mentioned this earlier in the overview as well. We've taken what you guys know as desired configuration management in ConfigMan 2007. We've expanded it, giving it more capabilities. And those more capabilities are giving you the ability of not only finding out-of-compliance systems, but also now remediating those systems, letting you fix those non-compliant issues directly from Configuration Manager. So not a lot of infrastructure required here for compliance settings. It's basically looking at your site server, your admin console, to create your policies, which I'll show you here in a moment. Management point for the clients to get those policies. The client retrieves those policies, scans for compliance. Hey, I'm out of compliance. Oh, this is something I can fix. And we tell them how to fix it, and they go ahead and fix that with auto remediation. Or if you want, you can just create an alert or a rule that says, hey, generate an alert when I'm out of compliance, and let me go and manually fix my non-compliance scenarios. In the blue boxes on the lower left-hand side, it shows you all the different types of sources of information you can check on your clients for compliance. Very common things are like what Mark mentioned. You have a corporate system, so you stamp a specific registry key. So you're checking to see, is this a corporate system or not? And if it's not, you might have to restamp that registry key, or maybe somebody did something on your system. Active Directory information, SQL Server, WMI, file system versions of applications that are installed, scripting, so you can do whatever you want to, XML, lots of different functions there. Some new things have been added to the feature besides just the remediation, the ability of copying settings. So taking one configuration item, copying it over to another configuration item. Revision histories. So Mark had created a configuration item and baseline and deployed it last week. And compliance was great. Our alerting system was not throwing any alerts. We were in compliance. And then all of a sudden he comes here and he looks at the console and all of a sudden we got an alert saying we're out of compliance. Well, what happened? It worked on Friday and now it's not working any longer on Tuesday. He can go look at the history of that configuration item and see who made the change. And he can see exactly what I changed in that configuration item to break it. So he can see what exactly who changed it, when they changed it, what got changed. And he can say, well, Wally was stupid. He shouldn't have done that. And he can delete my change and restore back his configuration item version that worked. Or he can go ahead and make the appropriate change back to what I had there. So great capabilities of monitoring who's doing what and who did what and then fixing whatever might have been broken. We also give you, again, great reporting, either in console or with the standard reports if you want to go run reports through SRS. And the last cool thing that we really do for you in this new product is we allow you to browse to a master system. So in the 2007 product, if you had a bunch of registry keys you wanted to gather or WMI properties, whatever, you had to have those on your site server or the admin console computer you're creating these configuration items at. Well, now you no longer have to do that. From your admin console, you can browse or connect to another computer to read its registry or look at its file system to find the settings that you want to model. You can model those off that master system and then deploy those to other clients and compare them to that master system and see, hey, is that registry set improperly or is WMI got the wrong value there, whatever the case is. Great way of helping you automate or ease the transition of creating your update scenarios. So momentarily, I'll show you a demonstration on that. Power management's built into the product. So it's not a separate add-on link. You had to have to config Man 2007 R3. It's built in. It works exactly the same way. So if you're familiar with our power management solution in 2007 R3, you know exactly what I'm going to say here. Week one, once you enable this, you would go ahead and collect your data. You enable power management. You let that policy get hit on the clients. They start collecting usage data, power on data, monitor, as well as end user activity. Once you've done that monitoring for a period of time, in this case it was suggested for a week, you look at that data and you figure, oh, wait a minute, I've got computers that are on 24 hours a day, but end users are only on there for 8 hours a day. So we're wasting a lot of power on these systems. We can cut our costs by implementing a power plan through Configuration Manager. So then you go in there and implement the power plan. You can take one of the built-in plans that are there, or you can create your own custom plan. The cool thing is that you can then implement those through Configuration Manager. So we'll go ahead and do that pushing of that power policy through you without having to go through group policy, because not all your clients are group policy enabled. A couple of additions we have here are the ability for you to copy your power plans, your custom ones, between collections. So I created a custom power plan for my all systems collection. I want to then replicate that down to my all Windows 7 desktops. I can copy that directly without having to recreate it. We also are VM-aware, so we'll automatically not monitor power or not implement power settings on a virtual machine because it doesn't make sense because the virtual machine is not the one that's taking the power. It's the physical box. So then you create your plan. You go ahead and implement those plans. So you create policies. Those policies you push out to your clients. You let that policy be implemented on your client computers. You monitor that for a period of time. Then once you've done that, you go ahead and do your analysis. And hopefully you'll see that your cost of kilowatt hours has reduced, the consumption of your kilowatts has reduced, and your CO2 savings have increased. So you've gained power efficiency, saving money, and reducing carbon impact on the environment. And I think this is the last thing we talked about before we go to our demo, and it's internet-based client management. We have that in ConfigMan 2007, and it works great. So if you have clients that you need to manage through the internet, because they don't come into the office very often, home systems or whatever they are, traveling salesmen, you can go ahead and manage those through Configuration Manager and get basically the same feature functionality for an internet-based client as you do an intranet-based client. The downside is it's a lot more complex in your infrastructure to manage these internet-based clients. You have to have an HTTPS or SSL scenario implemented. And the downside is that all your clients have to use that same infrastructure. So if you want to manage 10 clients over the internet, all 10,000 clients you have to have the appropriate certificates installed, and your distribution points, your management points, your stuff, software update points, et cetera, all have to have the appropriate SSL certificates. Now with Configuration Manager 2012, we made the environment a lot easier. No longer is it a site-wide setting to manage internet-based clients, so not all clients have to be configured that way. You now pick and choose individual site systems that you want to have supporting clients on the internet. So if you have a DMZ, or I guess you guys would say DMZ around here, you put your management point, your software update point, your distribution point in the DMZ, you give it the appropriate certificates, configure it for internet client management and HTTPS, and those 10 internet-based clients have the certificate. But my other 10,000 intranet-based clients, they don't have to have any certificates. They use a self-signed cert that would come naturally in Configuration Manager. And they would use a HTTP-based DPMP software update point. So I don't have to have my entire site configured for internet-based management. I just have individual systems, my individual site systems I need, and the individual clients. So it's a lot easier on your infrastructure, a lot easier on you guys getting those certificates deployed out to your computers, especially those workgroup-based clients where it's hard to get certificates out to them. Okay, let's jump over and do a quick demo on settings management. Very good. So you guys may be familiar with the DCM product in Configuration Manager 2007. It's great. It lets you, again, identify non-compliant scenarios, but it doesn't have any automatic remediation capabilities. If you find non-compliance, you have to create your own Configuration Manager collection out of that and then target some software distribution job to that to get those clients back into compliance. Now it's a whole lot easier. So first thing I'll show you here is that we have an alert pane. So if we had any non-compliant scenarios and you configured alert, an alert would be present right here in the console. So if I'm the compliance setting manager, I come in the morning, that's the first thing I look at in my console is, are there any alerts for me to look at? I have none. So that's meaning everything's good, or I haven't implemented anything yet, which is possible as well. But Mark's pretty on top of things, so he would know what to do. So here's a whole bunch of CIs that have been created, CIs being configuration items. Couple of cool things for you. You can import any configuration items you created from ConfigMan 2007. So you don't have to recreate things. When you import them, we'll convert the schema over to the new schema that we need for ConfigMan 2012. And so you can take your own stuff, export it, and import it, or you can go to the community sites and download configuration packs from anybody else that you want. So we've got a bunch of stuff imported in here. The one we're going to implement in this scenario is a smart screen filter. And what that's going to do for you, to show you the properties real quick, it's going to look for a setting, and that setting is looking at HKEY current user software Microsoft Internet Explorer phishing filter. So the scenario here is somebody might have browsed to a website that was a phishing site, and they turn off the phishing filter, the smart screen filter. And we want to make sure that that is always enabled in our environment. So I browsed to that location. I found the registry key that enables the smart screen filter. But I want to go beyond just finding out whether it's enabled or not. So you go to the compliance rules, and you can state that not only does that registry value have to exist, but I want it to equal a value of 1. A value of 1 means it's enabled. So it is enabled in my environment. And you have this checkbox here that says remediate non-compliant rules when supported. So you can go ahead and state that, yes, I do want to go ahead and remediate, and what I want to remediate is this value up here. So if it's not a value 1, I want to make it a value 1. So you have automatic remediation for registry and for WMI and for custom scripts. So we've got that configuration item, which is just built by browsing to that specific registry key. We've got that item there. Now to make it active, you just do like anything else, you deploy it. So you take that configuration item, you'd add it to a baseline, which I think we have a baseline here. Let's see if that's the one. We can go show members and see if it's there. Nope, that's not the one. So maybe it's this one. If not, we'll go and add it. Smart screen filter. So we got it here. So all we have to do is deploy it. So we go back to our baseline for malware cleanup and see if there's any deployments. There's no current deployments. So just like Mark did for his application, just do a deploy. I want to deploy the malware cleanup. Remediate non-compliant rules when supported. So not only does the configuration item have to support remediation, you have to tell the baseline I want you to remediate. Otherwise, you're just going to report non-compliance. By default, you can say remediate within maintenance windows if you want to. You can generate an alert if your non-compliant is not, if your compliance level is not within your specific SLA that you want. You can also integrate with Operations Manager and generate an alert in the Operations Manager monitoring pack for Configuration Manager. You specify your target collection, and we'll deploy this to system even though it was HKey current user. We'll go ahead and deploy to computers, and that is my settings management demo. And by default, we're going to reevaluate every 7 days just in case somebody then hits a website that would turn that back off. Okay, that deployment's been created. Let's go over and verify our client computer. So here we're in Internet Explorer. Let's go look at our internet options. And we'll verify that currently we're turned on, and then we'll go ahead and disable that. So here's enable smart screen filter. It is enabled by default. We're going to go ahead and turn that off. And now we'll just go back and show you that it is turned off. And you see this turned off. Now we're going to go ahead and retrieve policies through Configuration Manager. And you guys all know you don't have to force policy retrieval. We're just doing this to shortcut things in the demo environment instead of waiting that normal hour time frame. So we're pulling policies. You can see right now there's no configuration baselines to be evaluated here. It's probably got it by now, so if I hit refresh, I now have my configuration baseline that I need to evaluate. It says the last evaluation result was NA, NA being non-applicable. It hasn't evaluated yet, and so its compliance state is unknown. This is one of those randomized things we do to alleviate the storm in a VDI or pooled session scenario. So we randomize the when we're going to kick this guy off. I'm going to go ahead and force it to evaluate right now, so I'll select the baseline. I'll click evaluate, and now our evaluation state says we ran, and we're now compliant. Well, obviously, we were non-compliant before because it was turned off. Let's go verify that it did turn this back on. If so, we'll go back to Internet Explorer, Options, Advanced, and cruise all the way down to the bottom. And now you can see the smart screen filter is back enabled automatically. So in the 2007 environment, I would have had to create a collection of these non-compliant systems and then target a script that would reset this registry value. Here in 2012, with the automated remediation, I just enable the remediation, tell it what the setting I want it to be, and it does that automatically for me, provided I've enabled both cases. Last thing I'll show you before I kick it back over to Mark is if I go back over to the admin console now. Oops. Admin console. And client. There we go. In the server. It may not happen yet just because of the timing. It takes a few minutes for a state to get back up. But you would just go to the deployment monitoring space. So go to deployments. And then you would find your malware cleanup. Here, you would go ahead and you would wait for compliance through state messages, click run summarization, or you wait. I'm going to force it and see if we got any results back. Give it a moment to think, process really, not think, and then do a refresh. And if any results have come back in yet, oh, you can see I'm compliant already, directly in the console. So I don't have to go run a report. I don't have to go out and look at clients. I can directly look at the console and see what my compliance state is on any of my individual baselines that I've deployed. All right? With that, we'll go ahead and kick it back over to Mark. Hopefully, yep, nope, yeah, there we go.
Thanks, Wally. So with Config Manager 2012 SP1, what we've done is also tried to focus on, you know, kind of some continual improvements that we could make in terms of how you can simplify your infrastructure. So one of the things, you know, obviously a big need for what we heard from customers when 2012 was released back in April is the ability to add a new central administration site. So, for example, if you have a primary site that's not part of a current hierarchy, you know, just standalone, you're now able to, in SP1, to be able to add a new central administration site. So this is great. Now you no longer need to be worried about sort of future-proofing your hierarchies. You know, we want to have customers not deploy central administration sites unless they need it. So this is good functionality so that you can perhaps start with a primary site, and then once your client count gets high enough, then you can add in a central administration site. We also support migration between two different hierarchies. We'll talk about that in the infrastructure session a bit about why that's advantageous. You can kind of think of it as a good solution for like a merger acquisition type of scenario when you're trying to collapse hierarchies. The other thing that we strive to do too, and you've seen hints of it with the in-console monitoring, but we're really trying to simplify the administrative experience. The kind of second main bullet is really our continued desire to try to not require a SQL DBA to be required to manage the product. So we put controls in the product so that you can schedule, you can configure when traffic replicates, database traffic replicates across links, how much gets replicated, that using distributed views functionality. So, you know, for example, if you set up distributed views, you'll only pull that subset of information from your central administration site whenever you want to view that information. So it, instead of just continually sending information, it'll only do it on demand when you want to actually see it. And then the other piece is just around how much, and that's using compression on a link to really just, you know, as the name implies, shrink down, compress the amount of database traffic that you're sending. You know, software updates, what we have is the ability to fall back to WooMoo. We also now have the ability to distribute definition updates 3 times a day. In Config Manager 12 back in April, the general availability release, that was that solution we only supported once a day. So now this gets you up to the normal cadence that Microsoft Update releases definition updates. With endpoint protection, we implemented what are called real-time actions. That's the ability to select an action in the console, like run a quick scan, for example, hit that, and then it'll run on a client, you know, not necessarily instantaneously, but within about a minute or so, anywhere between a minute and 5 minutes. Kind of depends on the size of your hierarchy and how many clients you might have. We did a demo earlier today in the endpoint protection session, and I think it took about a minute for the thing to work. So that's really cool. You know, it's a good solution for not having to do a lot of the demo stuff that we're currently doing, where you have to sort of force a machine pulling interval. You can kind of click on an object in the console and say, do it now, and it'll go execute. And then that last piece there is a lot of the same stuff Wally talked about with settings management. It's just increasing kind of the portfolio of what we can do with settings management. This feature at the bottom around user profile data management, that's basically folder redirection, client-side caching, roaming user profiles. That's only available in Windows 8. Basically, what happened in Windows 8 is they allow you to now modify the settings for those features through WMI, which means that we can now get our hooks into it. In the past, you just couldn't do it. It was only group policy in which you could modify the feature configuration. So what we have in Service Pack 1 is it's really a new node that you'll see around these type of policies. The reason it's kind of different or special, if you will, from normal settings management is that it's a fairly complex feature to set up. It's got a lot of different controls and different things that you can do with it. As a result, we built specialized UI to make your life easier. All right, so with kind of flexible hierarchy management, this is what I talked about before. Again, it's as simple as you can just install a fresh cast. Plain, simple to do. Thing to reinforce, though, is if you're looking at this to have CMO7 parity, where you could take a running primary site and attach it to a running hierarchy, unfortunately, you can no longer do that. So what we implemented was the ability to use migration. The good thing about doing migration between two 2012 sites is that you can do cleanup type of scenarios where you want to be able to reduce the objects that you might want to move over. You can also use it for other scenarios that have been problematic in the past, like a lab to production. So we think that this will be a much more flexible scenario you can apply when you're looking to basically merge hierarchies together. And one of the messages you'll hear us drive in a lot, especially in the infrastructure session, is we really want people to reduce the hierarchies they have. And what we mean by that is really reducing the number of site servers that they're required to have. We think that changes around role-based administration, the ability to manage client agent settings and target those versus having them tied to a site, and several others I'll cover tomorrow, are very much enablers to you being able to reduce the number of servers you might need to support. So that leads me into simplify administration. So you've seen the UI. Basically, it's a new shell. It's got a lot of benefits to it, easier to discover information. And what's important with the UI, too, is how it then ties in with role-based administration. So we basically redid our security model. You now have a model that provides somewhat of the same outcome as what you could get in Configuration Manager 2007, but just a different way, a more flexible way. So in your hierarchy, you can now establish what are called roles, and you can think of those as class-level permissions. You know, for example, I'm an app administrator, and I only want you to have rights to applications. And then you can have instance-level permissions, and we call those scopes. So basically, it's like a tag. I can select an application, and I can apply a tag. And that gives you roughly the same functionality that you had in the old model. It's just a heck of a lot easier to administer that. And the reason being is you can do it once for the entire hierarchy. From your central administration side, you can set up these roles, you can set up these scopes, you can apply the scopes to objects. You can then take an administrative user, you know, like an, you know, just basically an account like mine, and you would say for this administration, this administrative user, this is what I'd like their role to be. These are, you know, in essence, the class objects that they can interact with, and then here are the scopes they can interact with. And the scopes can be one of two things. They can either be what are analogous to like a tag, if you will, on an object, or they can be a collection. So now what we do to secure resources is we treat a collection as a scope. So what's really cool about this, when you think about collapsing your hierarchies and supporting less servers, is that you don't need to have child primary sites simply for delegation scenarios. Instead, what you do is you create a collection, let's say servers, and based off of that server collection, you hand that to your server administration, your server administrator, and then say you got a desktop admin, you hand them a desktop collection. And then you no longer need two separate sites to do that. It's just all done logically. And what you in essence provide is kind of a walled off partition of resources that those administrators can interact with, but they can't interact with the other ones. So even if they mess up their query logic and they do like select star from you know the systems table, we'll do an intersection for you to make sure that they don't exceed the scope that they were given rights to. So for example, the desktop administrator writes these wacky queries; they'll always be limited by the actual desktop collection itself. So I'm going to hopefully that cut over. Perfect. I'm going to show you what role base looks like in the UI. So what we have in administration is, under the security folder, is a place where you'll define administrative users. So what I'm going to do is add a new user. Let's see. So Meg is her name. So I'm going to add her into the system. Once it's done doing some validation, could never quite figure out why this got a little slow in my demo environment. It will come back. What I'm going to do there in that second box is basically assign her a role. So kind of the net conclusion of this demo is that I'm going to create a down-level administrator whose focus is strictly around application management. So what I'm going to do is select a role for her, which is the app administrator. We provide a set of roles out of box, and these roles, again, are tying to objects on the other side. You can create your own roles. You know, you can create roles that, you know, you want to give class rights to apps, to updates, to OS images. But we provide a number of them out of box to make the experience a bit easier to get going. So it'll be the app administrator. And then here's what I was talking about in terms of scope. If I were to leave this the way it is right now, she could theoretically interact with any device in the entire hierarchy. But let's say, for example, for this administrator, I was using Meg simply as a North American administrator. So what I can do is I can pick a collection to limit her by, and I'm going to choose the North America collection. So what that's basically going to mean is, you know, just demo environment. Rather than having 12 total resources she can distribute software to or do, you know, it's an application scenario, then she'll only be able to distribute to one. And there's no way for her herself to be able to break beyond those bounds. So she's the North American administrator in terms of resources. And in terms of objects I want her to interact with, she can now interact now only with objects that are tagged with a North American string. It's a security scope. It's just basically a tag. So we'll create that user, and one of the things to kind of pay attention to in this demo is to take a look at how many apps there are. There's just basically a lot of apps. Almost the entire page is full. The other thing to pay attention to, too, is that the nodes you see here, you see apps, you see updates, you see operating system deployment, you see a number of different wonder bars and so on with every node. And the reason being is because I'm the full administrator, so I have rights to everything. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to launch the console, which I always have trouble doing, so I like to go this older way, is I'm going to run it now with her rights. Oops. I can never type in front of lots of people.
You're doing great, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. I hate this demo because I got to type. Okay, so first thing to notice once the console launches for Meg is what she sees is radically reduced. So this is a good sort of advantageous change when you think about a training. You know, you no longer have to sort of worry yourself with, oh, geez, I got this app administrator. Now I got to tell them don't go touch the OSD node, or maybe you got to explain more about how the product works. You just isolate that all. It's just a simplified console view for them. You don't even have to consider those type of vectors when you're thinking about training. If I click on the device collection view, you'll notice there's only one. It's North America. If she wants to go and create a new collection, she has to choose what we call a limiting collection, and it's only going to be based off of the one she currently has read rights to. So every collection she builds from here on out will be limited by, at the very least, the North American collection. So what's great is you can fully delegate rights to like a server admin, and you can just let them party on, and they can create child collections and so on, but they'll always be limited by that one aggregate collection, that all servers. The other thing to kind of notice too on the scope permissions is that when you come over to applications, for example, you'll notice the list is radically, you know, reduced. It's now showing only applications that have security scopes for North America. Okay. Back to PowerPoint. So with operating system deployment, what we did was made some changes, and I talked about some other ones we made in SP1. But specifically for the GA relays, we kind of focused on providing multicast support. We also wanted to focus on standalone media. And maybe one thing to kind of touch on quickly is sort of bringing SP1 back into the mix here, is that with pre-stage media in Service Pack 1, what we did is we allowed you to define multiple content types in pre-stage media. So with pre-stage media in the GA release back in April, you basically selected a WIM, and the WIM would go on a DVD or whatever you were using. Now you can actually select multiple content types, like applications, drivers, packages. The whole advantage of doing that is you can get more and more content actually on that media, so you don't have to pull content or as much content over the wire as you might have had to pull in the past. The other thing to kind of note down there is that we've done some integration into Task Sequence for user state migration tool 4.0 to make it easier for you to configure those options to make that transfer of state and restore of state a bit easier. I forgot the slide was coming. The other piece to talk about is with BitLocker. So kind of a common customer ask we got was increase the number of options we allow you to configure for BitLocker. So that's where we added in TPM plus PIN. The other thing with Windows 8 is a feature called U-Space BitLocker. This is where you encrypt data as it's laying down on the disk itself versus having to wait to encrypt your entire hard drive. This is advantageous, you know, for kind of the obvious reasons. It really helps enable that BitLocker functionality very quickly. You don't have to wait, you know, hours or so for the entire hard drive to finish provisioning. We put a lot of time into client health or client activity, and the goal here is we wanted customers just not to have to worry about Configuration Manager or the infrastructure. So we tried to embrace that the client itself was part of our infrastructure, and we wanted to make sure that it could operate in a very healthy manner. And if for some reason it can't, you know, the actual client runs into a problem, we basically have a watchdog service that runs that will remediate the Configuration Manager client itself. So what this is great is it kind of takes us out of, I think, you know, statistics we would get from customers is, you know, at times it could be very low, you know, 80% health. You know, we now see internally in large scale deployments within Microsoft and also some of our TAP customers, you know, we get health numbers closer to the upper 90s now, which is wonderful. It really kind of takes away a lot of the burden of, you know, just care and feeding of the client infrastructure. So again, kind of the goal here is just, we just don't want customers to worry about this. It's a client, talks to the server, it's vital, obviously, and we just want that to just frankly work, which is why we put it under the simplicity banner. In terms of kind of asset intelligence, inventory, you know, things that we do around sort of our software, software management type of suite, is there's been to some extent some changes that we made, but I think the one that I like to highlight, especially to, you know, majority of like a config manager audience who knows CMO7, which is pretty cool, is with inventory, for example, we put a MOF editor directly in the product itself, so you can go into basically client agent settings where you would define your MOF, and you can just go in there and just, you know, checkbox, you know, deselect classes, add classes. Super easy. You don't have to crack open Notepad, much to Wally's chagrin or to others who are used to doing that. It's just, you know, painfully easy to modify how you might inventory devices. Not necessarily a big change, because we had this in the past, but super valuable. With remote control, you can now issue a Control-Alt-Delete to those devices to get them unlocked, which is good. We also have made it easier to use remote control by making a firewall exception on the client itself for you if you choose to do that. So that just kind of helps make that feature as a whole much easier to deploy and get up and running. PowerShell. So with SP1, what we're implementing is PowerShell support. You can think of this as not just surfacing our current SDK. I'm not sure if you folks have looked at our SDK, but it was really built more for software vendors to be able to write on top of our product. With PowerShell, we're really embracing taking a look at what you can do in the admin console itself and making sure there are commandlets that map those same concepts. So, we don't want you interacting with sort of these foreign, classes in our WMI layer that might be more appropriate for a software vendor. We want to have commandlets that map very closely the same conceptual model that you use in the admin UI itself. You know, for example, there'll be a demo they'll do in the management session this week where you'll simply, create collections, add membership rules, the same type of actions you might perform in the console. We want to have that available to you at the PowerShell layer. And we also want to make sure when we implement these commandlets that the conventions we use, in terms of, it could be just as simple as names, but the verb names, how we express parameters, how we do our documentation, we want to make sure that all those things are kind of done in the spirit of just PowerShell overall. That way, if you got, people who are doing PowerShell in your environment, they'll be very comfortable using ours as well. And the last piece we're going to talk about is migration. So Wally's going to talk about how you get to the new product.
Alrighty, very good. And I know I'm the last thing between you guys and the opening reception, so we'll get this over in 4 minutes and 9 seconds, apparently. So both Mark and I have been talking throughout this presentation about the 2007 product and some of the great enhancements we made in 2012. But you guys got to get to where you are today to where we want you to be in the future with the product. So what we've done is we've done a great job in a migration technology to get you from your old 2007 environment over to this brand new, cool, fantastic 2012 infrastructure. So what we want to do is assist you with that migration. So when you guys moved from SMS 2003 to ConfigMan 2007, we didn't help you out at all. You could do an in-place upgrade, but if you did a side-by-side, you were on your own to recreate your objects or get them moved some other way. We now have a migration wizard that will help you pick and choose which objects in your 2007 environment, packages, collections, advertisements, software updates, DCM, OSD objects, whatever it is, and move them from the 2007 environment over to the 2012 environment. So you don't have to recreate things, but you can pick and choose what you want appropriately. We're going to help you with the migration of clients. So numerous different ways to migrate your clients, upgrading them from ConfigMan 2007 to ConfigMan 2012. We'll uninstall the old agent, we'll install the new agent, but we'll maintain your advertisement history so you won't rerun all those programs that you migrated over to ConfigMan 2012 just because you uninstalled and reinstalled. We'll maintain that history for you so it'll be an easy transition for your clients, and then they'll recreate their inventory data and so on. We want to minimize the WAN impact, so we want to prevent you from having to redeploy your content, your package content, out to your 2012 distribution points. So we allow you to share your DPs from your 2007 infrastructure with your 2012 infrastructure. So both your ConfigMan 2007 and your ConfigMan 2012 clients can use that same distribution point from ConfigMan 2007 to get their package files. And then when you got everything migrated over, you can take that distribution point that was shared and you can upgrade it from a 2007 DP over to a 2012 DP, keeping your content intact, even though we uninstall and reinstall. So you don't have to repush that content down to that DP over the wire, chewing up your WAN infrastructure. We want to allow you to maximize your reusability of X64 hardware. Everything is 64-bit now in ConfigMan 2012 as far as your server infrastructure, with a couple of exceptions, but for the most part, it's 64-bit. Well, let's say you have a 64-bit hardware now, but you don't have a second set. In a migration scenario, it's side-by-side, so I need two sets of hardware. We have this toolkit that you can use that will let you virtualize your existing 2007 environment, repurpose that box automatically through OSD and task sequences as a Hyper-V virtual machine environment, then virtualize your 2007 infrastructure hosted there, and then you install your 2012 infrastructure there, and you can migrate from the virtual 2007 on that same box running 2012, all in the same box. So kind of doing an in-place upgrade through migration on the same hardware. And then lastly, assist with the flattening of the hierarchy. Like we talked about, the hierarchy's flattened now. It's much smaller. So you can take multiple primary sites from 2007, you can migrate them over to one site over 2012, because you may have objects in multiple sites that are being owned. So we allow you to do that migration to help you assist with that change of the hierarchy infrastructure. We do that through object migration jobs as far as you're taking your advertisements or your packages or collections to do a couple different types of jobs that you have there. Reuse your content, as we already talked about. And then Mark mentioned the MOF editor we have now. You can import your old ConfigMan 2007 SMS DefMOF file, which existed there, into the editor that we have now in 2012. There's no more SMS DefMOF file. It's helping you maintain your investment in that hardware inventory. So a couple things you can do to prepare today. Start looking at where you can flatten sites. So where can I get rid of sites that I no longer need in the future? So start preparing for that. Make sure you're looking at the newer operating system, SQL Server, and everything 64-bit. So as you're acquiring new hardware, get 64-bit hardware, 64-bit OS, and SQL Server 2008. A look at branch cache as a way of reducing your WAN impact today for remote locations, offices, where you have a small number of clients. We support that both 2007 SP2 as well as ConfigMan 2012. Look at SQL reporting services. All reporting in ConfigMan 2012 is done via SQL SRS. So you can start implementing that today in ConfigMan 2007 R2 and R3 to get familiar with it and help ease the transition of your reporting over to the 2012 infrastructure. The last two are migration specific. Avoid mixing user and device rules in a single collection. We can't migrate those. It's supported in 2007, but not in 2012. And then lastly, make sure all your package source paths are UNC. Don't have a package source path that says C:\apps\marksapps. Because when you migrate that package over, that source path is going to stay the same. So from 2007 to now in 2012, remember new hardware, side by side, it's going to now still say C:\apps\marksapps. But that's not going to be a valid path on your new hardware. So use UNC so the path is still going to be valid once you migrate over. And this last slide is just showing you some of the differences between the empowering, unifying, and simplification coming in the last three versions of the product, the 2007 R3, 2012, which is available to you now, and then the SP1 product coming out in the Windows 8 timeframe, but available today in a CTP release. So you can go ahead and read those because we're out of time. With that, here's the other breakouts that we have this week. A couple have been done now, the top two, or not necessarily the top two. Endpoint protection was done in this overview. We have the deployment infrastructure tech overview tomorrow morning, migration Wednesday morning, or Thursday morning. And then Mark and I are doing patch and setting management late Friday, and the client management scenarios in Windows 8 timeframe, I believe, is Friday morning. So more breakouts coming. We also have a whole room full of hands-on labs out in the expo area where you're going to next. But those labs are available. There's 14 labs that are available to play around with in a virtual environment if you haven't played around with the product. With that, thanks for coming, and you guys have a great week, and please fill out your evaluations at some point in time in the next 24 hours or whatever they give you. So thank you all.
Thank you.